Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strom. So glad you're here with me today. My guest today is Mr. Northeast Wrestling, Brian Anthony. Brian is stepping away from in-ring competition, having one last match at Northeast Wrestling's Hat City Havoc 2 in Danbury, Connecticut on Saturday, April 27th. Brian's had a long career. He's been in wrestling for about 20 years. If you're not familiar with him and Northeast Wrestling, you probably should be, because the company's been around for 29 years and Brian has wrestled some of the absolute biggest stars in pro wrestling, from Cody Rhodes to Jerry the King Lawler to Matt and Jeff Hardy, and everybody in between. Long career rivalry with Matt Taven. So Brian is somebody I wanted to bring on. We've had him on in the past. Considering what's going on with his career right now, I thought that would be important to do. Fun time always with him. So here we go with my interview with Mr. Northeast Wrestling, Brian Anthony. So pleased to be joined today by Mr. Northeast Wrestling, Brian Anthony. Brian, welcome back to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Phil. Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure. Don't get offended if my dog is roaming around in the background here. He likes to hang out.
No, he's welcome to join us too. So we'll start with, so you're stepping away from the ring. You're having one last match, Northeast Wrestling's Hat City Havoc in Danbury, Connecticut on Saturday, April 27th. Can you explain why it is that you are stepping away from in-ring competition?
Yeah, you know, we put out a video a couple weeks ago on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that, where, you know, I made this announcement. And I wish it was under better circumstances. But look, it is what it is. I've been wrestling for 20 years. I've been with Northeast Wrestling for 17 years. I have done a lot of damage to my body. And in preparing for this, much like I think you did, I went back and listened to our old interview. And it's funny because I was talking then about how I was having a really difficult time during my, you know, reign as King of Bethany, because of neck issues. So here we are, fast forward a couple of years later, and it's significantly worse. I had an incident last year when I was teaming with Matt Taven where, you know, I lost feeling in my legs for, you know, 20, 30 seconds, which will scare you. Yeah. So following that, you know, I had some weakness on my left side when I was training, actually for Danbury last year, the first Hat City Havoc, which led me to go to the doctor. You know, I was kind of hoping it would be a cortisone shot or rehab, something along those lines, but unfortunately not. I have two severely herniated discs and some stenosis as well, which is the narrowing of the spinal column. So with that said, it's time to take a step back, get that all fixed. And, you know, this is a way to go out, my home city, say goodbye, have one last match. And unfortunately, that's just the reality of what's going on right now.
How do you feel physically right now, and why do one last match? What was the kind of the thinking behind it?
Well, you know, to be honest, I guess part of it's a little selfish. You know, I've had this 20-year career, you know, again, 17 with Northeast Wrestling. I've gotten to do all these amazing things. And the last couple matches I had weren't necessarily the most enjoyable times I had in wrestling. Specifically my last match, which was when Matt Taven and myself lost the tag team titles to Kerr and Danny Math. And the reason I say it wasn't the most enjoyable times was because I really, at that point, probably had no business being in there. Truthfully, I was in a lot of pain that last match. I had some personal stuff going on too, so my mind wasn't necessarily there either. It just wasn't one of my favorite days in wrestling. So it's really difficult, after all these amazing things I've gotten to do, for me to accept that that was going to be my last night in the business. So, you know, when I got the news about just how bad this was, I had it in my head and in my heart that I didn't want to go out that way. And I at least wanted one more as a way to see everybody, you know, say goodbye to my fans, my friends, you know, do it in front of my friends and family. So yeah, selfishly, you know, a little bit of it is for me, but I also want the fans to have one last great experience and remember me that way, not so much as they would have, you know, had I gone out the way I just mentioned. As far as how I feel physically every day, that's what makes this so difficult. Initially, when I went in to get my MRIs done, I was really in a bad way, more so than I let anybody know, you know, aside from my wife, obviously. But I mean, it was to the point where my left side had started to atrophy from their nerves being pinched. I was significantly weaker on this side, and I was waking up almost on a daily basis with numbness in my hand and my fingers. So, you know, this is something that had to be addressed. Now, you know, I'm at a point where I've altered the way I lift at the gym, my physical activity, you know, just my everyday life. I'm obviously not wrestling. So I feel pretty good most days. You know, most days I can do normal activity and feel okay. The days I don't feel good are horrible because, you know, I'll be driving a car and trying to turn and hit my neck, or I'll have, you know, no feeling in my fingers, things like that. So it's tough. You know, when you feel okay most days, as long as you alter your lifestyle, it's a hard thing to say, okay, cut me open. Let's put a plate and some screws in there and fix this thing. But, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, I would say 80% good days, but the 20% are bad.
Yeah. I know Northeast Wrestling is kind of hard to say it sometimes, but any idea who the match is against at this point?
So I put it out there that I was going to have one last match. I didn't throw a challenge out there. I'm waiting for somebody to, you know, answer the door and say they want to be the guy to step up and, you know, maybe make a name for themselves to put me out to pasture. So until somebody steps up and says something, I can't answer that question.
Very good. Do you still see yourself involved in pro wrestling? We talked about it last time. The interesting thing about you is that your run in wrestling has provided you with a lot of work skills that are transferable in the real world: marketing, branding, media relations, merchandise. And I'm sure you've done plenty of roles that I'm not even thinking about right now. So do you still see yourself getting involved or wanting to be involved?
You know, that's a really tough question. And that's probably the million-dollar question that everybody's been asking me. Towards the end of last year, when I realized, you know, I had these neck issues going on, I did do some commentary and different things at some Northeast Wrestling events. And it's tough. You know, I enjoyed it. I enjoy the behind the scenes stuff. Like you said, there's some stuff fans probably don't know that I've been involved in, but my passion is performing and being in front of the crowd, hearing the roar of the crowd. I don't necessarily get the same joy out of doing those other things. You know, I'll be the first one to tell you that, you know, I used to tell the Graysons are a good example when they were in my group, Dan Evans, you know, Keith Youngblood, when he was training, make yourself invaluable, make yourself irreplaceable.
Yep.
If that meant, you know, getting to the shows early and setting up chairs or helping get venues or helping put up posters and flyers and all those things, right? So I'll be the first one to preach that. And I think that it benefited a lot of those guys and myself, because when I first got into Northeast Wrestling, and if you talk to anybody, they'll tell you I still do those things to this day. But the joy that I get of being in the ring is not necessarily the same joy I get from doing those things. So truthfully, the answer to that question is time will tell. Northeast Wrestling's been great to me. Michael Lombardi's already told me he'll find something for me to do. He wants me involved. It's really going to be, you know, how do I feel after April 27th? You know, part of me right now thinks, maybe I just get away from wrestling for a while, see how I feel a little bit down the line. I don't know, truthfully. I just don't know how I'm going to feel come April 28th.
Yeah, get your body right, clear the mind, and then figure out what the if there is a next step. I mean, that's you know, only natural. You spend so much time and sacrifice so much of yourself for wrestling that it's time to maybe just take a deep breath and then, you know, kind of figure out what's next. You're also being inducted at a dinner the night before into what they're calling the Northeast Wrestling Hall of Fame. I know they have some inductees they've had in the past. I know they also have Velvet Sky this year too. What's it mean to you to be honored by a group that you've spent so much time with?
Yeah, you know, April 26th, we're going to do the Hall of Fame inductee thing, and you know, the retirement dinner. It's awesome, man. What can I say? I've spent 17 years with Northeast, as I said earlier, and the fact that they want to do this and include me with, you know, other names they've already inducted, it's just awesome. I think you were there, geez, it had to be probably 8 or 10 years ago now, but we used to do something called the Hammerlock Awards, which was essentially our version of, you know, the Slammies. We would have different categories, fans would vote on it. You know, fans could buy tickets to sit at different tables with different wrestlers, and people get inducted into the Hall of Fame and give speeches. It was awesome. And I always used to get upset saying, why don't we do this anymore? But, you know, like anything, of course, there's a cost associated with it.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that had something to do with it disappearing, but I am actually really excited to see it coming back because I think fans are going to be shocked at just how fun it is. I mean, you get to interact, get to hang out. There's going to be speeches. There's going to be people getting inducted. I'm actually probably more nervous about the dinner than I am the show because, Wow. Well, my whole career, you know, as a talker, I always just kind of flew off the cuff. I never really wrote things down. I never really tried to memorize things. But now the pressure's on because I got to give a speech, and I feel like I can't just go up there and wing that.
My best advice on the speech is prepare, but don't write it all out.
Yeah.
They always tell wrestlers with bullet points, know where you're going. But I gave a best man speech once that was just bulleted points on a pad. And then the rest of it just went extemporaneous from there. So I kind of just felt the crowd a little bit and saw where they were going.
Yeah. Well, so. It was funny because, you know, I'm talking to my wife about this, and she says to me, like, oh, did you start your speech yet? And I was like, I'm not writing a speech. And she's like, no, you have to write this down. I was like, no, I'm going to wing it like I always do. And she's like, yeah, I don't think you can wing this one. And then I'm talking to Michael Lombardi, and I was like, I'll keep it short. You know, he's like, no, he's like, you got 17 years here. People want to hear stories. I'm like, oh, geez, what have I done to myself? So that's probably the thing I'm most nervous about for the whole weekend. I'm actually very excited for Hat City Havoc. I can't wait to be in front of the crowd, but definitely nervous about the retirement speech.
Neon Tux?
I wish I could find one, man. I don't think there's time to have one made at this point, but my dog, Lucha, he's working on a lime green tux.
Nice, nice, nice. I was going to ask you, too, you've got so many of your memories behind you on your wall there. What's your favorite moment on your wall in your wrestling room there?
God, there's so many, Phil. I mean, if you look behind me, you can see up in the corner that picture with Hulk. Just that whole day was so amazing. That was at Dutchess Stadium in New York.
Yep.
It was the event where Hulk and Roddy Piper had their last stare down. You know, right underneath that, you can see there's Hacksaw there. Right next to that, Matt Hardy holding my hand up. How many guys get to say they beat Matt Hardy in a ladder match? Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, what's cooler than that? I mean, you just go down the list, you know, Hacksaw, Jimmy Hart, you know, over my other shoulder, there's me choking Jerry Lawler. Jeff Hardy hit me with the Swanton, David Arquette with the spear. I mean, Ricky Steamboat, you know, right behind me on this corner here. I wrestled Jeff Hardy, and Ricky Steamboat was the special guest referee. It blows my mind. I mean, you can't see it here, but, you know, a little further down the wall is a picture of Cody Rhodes giving me a suplex. I wrestled Cody Rhodes. The guy just main evented WrestleMania 40. I'm very lucky, Phil, and that's why, you know, even April 27th, I keep telling my friends and my family, like, this is not the Brian Anthony funeral. I don't want this to be some big sad weekend. I want everyone to come out, have a great time. Let's relive these memories at the dinner. I can't wait to talk about all these things. I am so lucky to have these stories to share. I just said this the other day on the radio because I was on locally here at I-95 promoting the show. It's amazing. I was a 12 or 13-year-old kid begging my mom to take me to the toy store to buy these wrestling figures as a kid, right? And now all these guys on this wall behind me are guys that I used to play with their wrestling toys, and now I'm wrestling them in real life. So I don't want anyone to think that I take these things for granted. These things all happened because of Northeast Wrestling. They gave me an opportunity to do things I never dreamed were possible. I can't state that enough how lucky I am. And that's why I don't want this to be a sad ending. This is a celebration. Let's party. Let's have a great time. Let's relive these things. And let's make one more big memory April 27th.
Yeah, I tell you what, too. I totally agree with you on the Hall of Fame, the dinner thing. I was not at the what did they call it? The
Hammerlock Awards.
Hammerlock Awards. I was not at that. But like for me, and I've been trying to get Michael Lombardi on this show for a little bit, and he still hasn't been on yet, ridiculously enough, since I've actually known him for like almost longer than anybody I've known in wrestling at this point. But the history of that company, I think, is something that people need to know a little bit more about, because yeah, people will look at it and be like, oh, it's an independent company. But then like, when you look at the fact that it's been around for 29 years now, I think it's been. And then when you also consider all of the change that has happened in pro wrestling over the course of 29 years, I mean, NEW was running shows while ECW and WCW still existed. And the WWF was actually giving them talent, because WWF was allowing talent to do indies back then. Sure. Like, it didn't go through the whole TNA ROH era. Then the AEW pops up. So like when I look at the photos behind you and I see all the different eras that you were a part of, it's like, it's incredible the level of talent that Northeast was able to have on its shows consistently. And in a number of different types of shows too. It wasn't always just, okay, your big stadium blowout shows. You know, there's all sorts of different venues. You mentioned in wrestling Cody Rhodes. It's incredible to look back at his story and see that basically where he turned into the suit wearing Cody was literally in Northeast Wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back to the beginning of your statement. I agree with you. It is criminal that people don't know more about Northeast Wrestling, and that there isn't more footage out there available, readily available, I should say. For a little while, we had the Northeast Wrestling Network on Pivot Share, and people loved it. And I'm really hoping that lands somewhere where people are going to have, you know, premium access to it, because it is, it's criminal. So many guys that have come up through the independents and wound up at AEW or WWE is mind blowing. And the fact that people can't relive that is a shame. Good luck getting Michael on the show. I'm betting against you on this one.
I'm gonna be persistent, and
Just going back to the Cody Rhodes thing, you know, he was in, you know, TNA and Ring of Honor at the time when he first started coming around at Northeast Wrestling, and I just will always remember two things about Cody that were awesome. One was at the Town Hall in Bethany. Right? A building that holds 300 people.
Yep.
Cody was doing shows for us. This guy did not have to come there and wrestle in front of 300 people. But not only did he do it, he had a blast. He was a class act. And I'll never forget, at the end of the night, he got everybody together, which he didn't have to do. Again, he didn't have to be there. But he did. And he had a bottle with him. And he poured everyone that wanted one a shot. And I'll never forget him saying, this isn't about the alcohol. This isn't about that. This is about fellowship. And he did a toast and said how happy he was to be there. And I just remember being blown away by that, because in all my years in the business, 90% of the guys you deal with that have been in the big leagues, if you will, are great. But there is a small percentage that, you know, it's almost like a chore for them to be there. Cody was never that way. The guy was such a class act from day one. It was unbelievable. And my other favorite Cody story, and this one I'll never forget because he had no idea who I was. You know, he came, he's, Michael tells him, all right, you're with Brian Anthony tonight. And, you know, I said earlier, I got to wrestle Jeff Hardy with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat as a special guest referee. I mean, like, it's mind blowing. Well, I got to do the same thing with Cody, where Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was a special referee. And I'll never forget Cody, you know, he was on like the warpath, trying to have all these five-star classics on the indies and make a new name for himself. He was debuting new moves and all that. And he gets me and he's like, I've got this idea. It might be a little silly. I don't know. If you don't want to do it, it's fine, you know? And I'm like, oh, what is it? You know? And he's like, well, I was thinking, you know, we're at the baseball stadium and we've got Ricky. He's like, what if I ran the bases And I get to home plate and clothesline you. And Ricky calls me safe at the plate. And I'm like, this is grand. Like, are you kidding me? You are with the right guy. Yes, let's do all of that. You know, and like, I think he was just so used to these guys wanting to go out and do everything under the sun. Right. And I was like, no. You got the right guy for this. I was like, let's do more of that.
And you'll get a good, better reaction from it than all the other different wacky stuff that you probably could have thrown into the ring.
Oh, it was great. He closed on me at home plate. He picked me up, body slammed me on the plate. Ricky's there calling safe. I mean, I remember seeing him after that and showing him the video, and he was dying laughing. He was like, I'm so glad we did that. He's like, I'm so glad I talked you into that. And I was like, talk me into it.
I was crazy. I tweeted yesterday. Somebody reminded me that, like, hey, you know, you interviewed Cody, like, kind of at the beginning of this. And I was actually at that Bethany. I don't know how many times Cody worked Bethany. I was at the one when Dijak won the Battle Royal, and then Cody faced Dijak for the Northeast Wrestling Championship in the main event. The great thing about the NEW arena is that it doubles as the Bethany, Connecticut Town Hall. So in the backstage area, there's a number of very nice looking conference rooms where the town council meets or whatever. Sure. So I got to pose Cody like at the head of the table with the championship belts. And he gave me an interview. It was ahead of when he was wrestling Rey Mysterio at Dutchess Stadium. But like, yeah, you look back at that card and then you look at Northeast, and it's like the undercard of that show had Keith Lee losing to Wrecking Ball, I think, and MJF losing to JT Dunn. So it's right. Like, you look back at that card now, it's like Cody and Dijak. Dijak's on USA Network every week. But that's the level of show you're getting it. Like, and for a guy like you who's worked the bulk of your career in Northeast, like, that's the point I'm making is that you're already in the big time.
Yeah, no. And, you know, going back to what you said earlier, you made a comment about independent wrestling. And, you know, I have never looked at Northeast Wrestling as another indie. Northeast Wrestling is not an independent in my mind. It's a wrestling company, right? I always hated when people called it independent or indie, because you had guys from all over coming to work these shows. WWE, AEW, like you said. Back in the early 2000s, WWE was sending talent to Northeast Wrestling. You know, WWE doesn't just send talent to any indie. Northeast Wrestling is, you know, a thing of its own. It always bothered me when people would refer to Northeast Wrestling as another indie, because I just feel like it was so much bigger than that. And that's not me saying that because I spent my career there. It's me saying that because, you know, look at my wall. Look at these guys we just talked about. Like, these guys don't just work anywhere, you know, and Northeast Wrestling truly to me is so much bigger than it's given credit for.
Yeah. And if I could ever tell that story at some point, I would be the one interested in actually working on that too, because I think it's something that people would be interested in. So we'll start with the Michael interview if we ever get it, and then move forward from there. Next thing I wanted to ask you about, we talked about it a little bit last time, but didn't really go too deep into it. What was it like doing your long angle with David Arquette?
It was awesome, man. I'm glad you actually brought that up, because I don't think the years that I was the King of Bethany or King of Northeast Wrestling really were appreciated enough, because it was the most fun I ever had in my career. And I've said that a million times over. You know, just, you know, traveling with Dan Evans, we got so close. You know, me, him, and Vito would go on road trips together. He became a real life friend. You know, this was a guy that I was just doing some training with and then brought him into the group. And now I've got a lifelong friend. So just the whole time was so fun for me because I was really working with my friends. And then when the Arquette thing came along, you know, I remember Michael calling me, saying like, oh, you know, I got something good for you in Poughkeepsie, it was going to be. And he says, we're bringing David Arquette. And I was like, oh, wow. You know, and like, I think I was so shocked by it that my reaction was kind of subtle. And he's like, what, you're not excited? I was like, no. I was like, I am. I just never expected that in a million years. You know, I guess he was in New York filming and had the relationship with Al Collins or saw a poster or something along those lines. And the next thing you know, he's on the show. I think we were only a week out, so we didn't even have that much time to promote it. But, you know, this ended up going on for at least a year, maybe even longer. And what people don't know about that whole thing is even when he was doing the autograph signing, I think it was WrestleCon or one of these things in New York City, we didn't tell anybody that I was going to show up. So I don't know if you remember that clip.
I do. A friend of mine was there and sent me a video of it.
It actually made it into his documentary. And literally we told no one. I honestly don't even remember if Arquette knew. He might've, I might've texted him or something and tipped him off. But like, I literally just showed up to the hotel. Somebody I knew had a room there, showed up, changed with Vito in the hotel room. And we just had Lou follow us with a camera in the hotel. And we just, when we got to the gate or whatever, said, oh, you know, we're here for the signing. They thought we were part of the show. Cause I was wearing the cape, the crown, no shirt. I'm all oiled up. And we literally just beelined for our Arquette's table. And I'll never forget Bischoff and Schiavone were sitting next to him. And it wasn't even something I had planned, but I just looked at him and I said, you know, something about Arquette being the worst world champion in history and you two are responsible for it, you know, and they both reacted to it and we're cheering Arquette on. And the next thing you know, diving off a table onto me in front of a thousand people. But like, I don't think security knew what to do because I think they assumed it was planned because nobody came over to break it up. It was wild to me because it was, we had no permission to do it. We just showed up and started doing it, you know?
That's amazing. I could fill in some of the blanks on Arquette too, because when that started happening with him, you know, I ended up doing an interview with him before your angle started. And he tells me like, oh, well, I said, how did you get hooked up with the Now?
Okay.
And he's like, well, I was reading this story. It was on the Poughkeepsie Journal website, and it was about this wrestler, Vic Delicious, breaking his leg. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, you read a story that I wrote.
That's great.
And he's like, oh, you're the guy that wrote that? I'm like, yes. Like, so he sought out Vic off of reading that story, and that was how he connected with them and then ended up linking up with Michael and then ended up linking up with you. Yeah. So I'm amazed that, like, it was just amazing to me. I was like, wait, you read my story?
Well, there's so much more to the Arquette thing. The plot just continuously thickens because, you know, he was also trying to film that documentary about getting back to wrestling. So during that time, I was also helping to train him, you know, for some of that. And, you know, we had that big match in Danbury. And a lot of those clips were supposed to be used in the documentary. They ended up not being used, which was a bummer. But, you know, some of the other things, too, is like he's just such a great guy.
Yeah.
The guy would give you the shirt off his back. He'd probably kill me for telling you this or telling the story on there. But I'm almost positive one of the shows that I wrestled him at, he might have donated everything he made to Vic's injury or surgery or something like that.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, but I'm almost positive that's a fact. You know, just even when him and I teamed briefly as Hollywood royalty, he was just so easy to deal with. I remember I said to him, I was like, look, it bothers me when tag teams don't match. We've got to get matching gear. And he's like sending me designs and he was like all about it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I had to paint. Like the guy's texting me ideas. He was so into it. It was so easy to work with him. He's just such a great guy. To be honest, I still chat with him to this day. You know, I'll just shoot him a text. Hey, what's going on or whatever. And he always gets back to me. He's just such a good guy, such a good human being. You know, I can't say enough good things about Arquette. He was just such a great guy. And it was some of the most fun I ever had.
I'll need to work with you in order to get him on here because he's another one I want to get on here at some point. But when I was last in touch with him, it was actually during the SAG-AFTRA strike, so he wasn't able to do any interviews at the time, too. So,
he's such a great guy.
Yeah,
that, you know, even with his documentary, like I said, I was supposed to have a lot more in there that ended up not making it. But I did have that one clip from the autograph signing. It made it in there for 9 seconds. So thanks to David Arquette, I have a movie credit to my name.
Yeah.
And he had actually offered to bring me down to, you know, the big movie festival. I think it's in Dallas. Was it South by Southwest or something?
Right. Yep.
So I was actually supposed to go to that for the premiere of his movie, but because of COVID, it got canceled. But man, what an experience that would have been, huh?
Yeah. And I'll say too, to the thing about him contributing somewhat to the medical bills for wrestlers and stuff. That's also not out of the character for him either, because I don't know if you remember this, but when he did the WCW run and people were so heavily critical of him, it came out at that time that all of the money he made off of WCW, he donated to the families of Owen Hart and to Darren Drozdoff at the time.
Yeah, I have heard that. I mean, that's what I mean about him. You can't say, you know, enough good about it. I actually would have loved for him to be up here for, you know, my retirement weekend, but unfortunately he's filming, he's not going to be available. But, you know, again, just going back to what a good guy he is, he sent me a message saying how much he would have loved to have been here. So, you know, that means a lot.
Yeah. We're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. So you have this other Instagram called Average Guy Mediocre Customs, which is stuff you do in your spare time.
Sure.
What was your favorite custom figure of yours that you made?
You know, man, I created that page with the intention of making it a hobby that I'd be able to come home, do at the end of the day and push these things out there. Not to sell them or anything, just for myself. Unfortunately, that never happens because I just am so limited on time, you know, but I have gotten a few up there. I think my favorite one was Vito. I made a Vito where he's wearing all his stuff from the King days, the white long coat, the cane, the whole deal, top hat. So I think that's probably one of my favorites.
Nice. Next question. What collectible that you have is your prized possession, and what's something that you would like?
Ooh, that's actually a really, really good question. So I think I mentioned on our interview last time that my basement is essentially a vintage wrestling museum down here. I love old wrestling collectibles. I'll buy current stuff, but only of guys from the time frame I collect, which is the late 80s and 90s. I have a very rare, I believe to be very rare, $1 Million Man piggy bank. It's kind of like one of those old Tootsie Roll banks. And it's just got a wrap, you know, with the $1 Million Man's face on it. And I actually don't know that much about it because I haven't found another one. And I think maybe along the lines, Cardona might have mentioned it on one of his podcasts, you know, way back about how rare it was. I think it was like something you could only get out of the WWE catalog, you know, back in the, you know, either late 80s or early 90s, whatever it was. So that's probably one of the coolest things I have, just because I don't think there's too many of them out there. I never really got into autograph stuff or ring worn stuff. That's not really my cup of tea, but I do have the entire Hasbro collection. Got every one of those. So I've got some pretty cool stuff. But yeah, that $1 Million Man thing is probably one of the rarest things I believe I have. Something I want? That's a loaded question because there's really no end to what I want.
There's no rule. So if there's more than one.
I don't, you know, I don't know. I have the Hasbro. I said I have the whole Hasbro collection. I guess I misspoke because there is two things I don't have. I don't have the Malloway Bret Hart and I don't have the Malloway Undertaker. I have the complete regular set and I do have a fully bagged Malloway Hogan, which is another one of my prized pieces. But yeah, I guess maybe the Bret and Taker Malloways, just to fully complete that set, would be cool.
Out of curiosity, how are you on LJNs?
Oof. I've got all the commons and I've got a couple of the rarer ones. I've got a Warrior that's in mint condition, which is one of my babies. I had a chance, and I'm shaking my head because I've never forgiven myself. It was the day of one of the Danbury shows, and I remember I was actively promoting the show on I-95, and my wife was texting me saying, I just saw this ad on Facebook. You know, there's somebody a couple towns over selling all this wrestling stuff. You have to call as soon as you get off the air. And I did that, and I go to this person's house, and I ended up buying all sorts of stuff. As I'm there, it's funny that it always comes back to Northeast Wrestling. It always comes back to Michael. But as I'm there buying all this stuff, Michael is texting me saying, where are you? Where are you? I need you at the building. I need you to help me set up. And I remember pulling this bin out, and it was all of the LJNs. And I remember seeing Boss Man and Warlord and all these LJNs that I knew were extremely valuable. And I said to this woman, please do not sell anything else. I said, I have a show today, a show tomorrow, traveling back on Sunday. I will be here on Monday. Please don't sell anything. I said, anything I don't end up buying, I will help you get rid of. I have, you know, sources and contacts to this kind of stuff. And she said, okay, I won't sell anything else, I promise. And I went there Monday and I was like this, waiting to get all those black card LJNs. And they were gone.
Gone.
Ugh. And I said, what happened? I said, I thought you promised me you weren't going to sell anything. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, somebody came and made me an offer. I sold it. I was like,
What's crazy with the LJNs is this is the only collecting I ever do when I was younger, but I had all of them.
Yeah.
But played with. I was a kid.
Yeah.
Sure. So, but I had all but I think two that they ever came out with. Three, actually. Bret Hart, I did not have.
Okay.
Warlord, I did not have. Haku, I did not have. Every other one, I'm pretty sure I had.
Well, I want to say this. You know, I was talking.
But now they're all gone.
Yeah. I was talking earlier about how Dan Evans and I became such good friends during the King run. So, Dan, if you were listening to this, please stop holding your childhood LJNs hostage in a box in your parents' attic, because I know you have them. I've been trying to buy them from you for years. Sell them to me. It's like Toy Story. Let them be free.
And then last question for the three count. Who's Brian Anthony's biggest career rival, and what are you going to miss most about being in the ring?
My biggest rival, it's got to be Matt Taven. We talked a lot about this last time.
Yeah.
I just loved all the matches I ever had with him. I don't think we ever had any that were stinkers. My dog is really interested in what's going on here. He just woke up from slumber, but you know, it's gotta be Taven. We just had so many matches together. So many of them were so good. So many of them, I feel, stand the test of time and are still my favorites today. You know, the guy's done it all. Say what you want about him. Him and I had a tumultuous relationship early on. I think it was all professional jealousy, mainly on my part, because here I was doing my thing and he's going off to Japan and Ring of Honor and doing all these great things. But I've come to appreciate that and respect it because he did the grind, and you look at where he is now. You know, he got that awesome moment at MSG for Ring of Honor, and you know, he went to Japan, he went to Mexico, he did all these great things, and now he's found a home in AEW. So I'm really happy about that. I'm really happy for him. I feel like he just deserves it so much after all these years of putting the time in. And it's just, I can appreciate his body of work, and I appreciate that he brought the best out of me.
Brought the best out of each other, really, you know?
Yeah, honestly, man, those are still some of my favorite matches in my career. I would say winding down the past few years, I really, really, really enjoyed my stuff with Danny Maff. We had a strap match at the Northeast Wrestling Arena. That's one of my favorite, you know, I guess modern era in my case, matches of this era of my career. Like post King, I would say that was probably my favorite match I had. I was really proud of that one, and just the vibe in that building was so electric that night. I feel like it was one of my last, you know, great moments. And just my stuff with Kingston was so fun. Kingston is such a professional and just such a great guy. I really liked working with him towards the end. And, you know, the list goes on. Or Cat, the Hardys earlier on. I mean, geez, if I could have worked Jerry Lawler every night the rest of my life, it would have been the greatest thing ever. I mean, I loved working with Jerry. I've got some Jerry Lawler stories that, you know, maybe I'll bring out at this dinner. Like, it's been a great ride, man. What can I say? I mean, it's just been awesome. It really has. And I can't thank all these guys enough. Can't thank Northeast Wrestling enough.
Well, Brian Anthony, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on again. Really enjoyed following your career for as long as I have, which I think is pretty much almost all of it. But
I really appreciate that. I do. It means a lot to me. I respond to fans all the time on social media, and I don't want them to take it lightly when I say how much I appreciate the support and all these things, because I really do, man. I'm a kid that grew up a wrestling fan that, all right, maybe I never made it to WWE or AEW. And, you know, there's days where that haunts me. There's days where it really bothers me. But then there's other days where I'm just so appreciative for what I got to do. There's not too many kids walking around Danbury that can say they wrestled, you know, the Hardy Boys and Jerry Lawler and had Jimmy Hart manage them or got chopped by Ric Flair. You know what I mean? So instead of beating myself up about the things I didn't get to do, I really try and appreciate the things I did get to do. And I want everyone out there to know it's not lost on me. I really do appreciate the things that I got to do.
Well, Northeast Wrestling, Hat City Havoc, Danbury, Connecticut, Saturday, April 27th, the last match of Mr. Northeast Wrestling, Brian Anthony. Thank you so much again for joining me today, and you're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, Phil, I appreciate it. And just to close this thing out, because, you know, I'm a wrestler, so I'm a shameless promoter. So northeastwrestling.com, if you want to come out to that dinner on Friday night, tickets are up right now. And then, of course, like you said, Hat City Havoc, same thing, northeastwrestling.com. The entire floor for this show is sold out, and we're still a week and a half away. So if you want tickets, get them. Get up in the bleachers. Let's go out in style. All right, northeastwrestling.com for the dinner, for Hat City Havoc 2. Brian Anthony, one last match, but it's pro wrestling. So never say never.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on an outstanding career and all you've done for me and over the years too. So really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. You have a great day, man.
Thank you. Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank Brian Anthony for joining me today. Once again, Northeast Wrestling, Hat City Havoc, Danbury, Connecticut, Saturday, April 27th. Follow me on Twitter @UnderTheRing for all the latest guest announcements, and have a great weekend.